Here an audience member asks, do you need a guru?
Yes.
Do you need a guru to find yourself? Where do you find one? Can you use anything else?
The question of whether you need a guru, there are stages in your development where you need a guru. However, you've got to understand what a guru is. A guru is not a teacher. The relation between the guru and chela is not interpersonal, it's intrapersonal. That is, that element of my guru, which is a little old man in a blanket over in India, is just a little old man in a blanket over in India. And the place that he knows everything in my head, he is everything in my head, and he's as much here as he is there. And if he isn't as much here as he is there, he's a hype. And I shouldn't be thinking of him as a guru anyway. So therefore, the whole idea that I would go anywhere to see the guru must obviously be a fallacy. Right, that's the first part of it. So that then I realize that each person finds his guru as soon as he's ready to find his guru. That is, as soon as your head is open enough, he's available to you, because there's only one of them in the purest sense, since it's not connected with ego in that sense, right? So there's nowhere, the game I'm looking for a guru is obviously a trip, like any other trip, or call looking for the guru, which is the thing you do before you despair of finding the guru, which is what is the prerequisite to opening your head to finding the guru, right? Because despair is a necessary prerequisite for the next degree of consciousness, okay? That's absolutely a prerequisite. So a lot of what we see in our society as a malaise, which we call deep despair and depressions, is in fact this consciousness transformation that's occurring and this absolutely necessary prerequisite before we can start to hear the next level, which is a very deep despair and a depression with everything we have going. And rather than teaching each other to adapt to what we had, it would be better to honor the despair and allow a person to be in that despair until he comes through it, hopefully coming through it in a more evolved fashion if he's got support for it. As far as teachers are concerned, a teacher is wherever you are when you're ready for that teacher. That is, if you hear enough to ask the question, how am I going to get on with my work? And you say, well, what I ought to do is calm my mind down. Then you say, well, how do I calm my mind down? Now, asking that question sensitizes you to see a lot of beings around you who have been busy calming their minds down or teaching people how to calm their minds down that until then you passed by and never even noticed existed, because you were so busy thinking of them as kooks, nuts, cranks, or people that do those things, but they're nice guys anyway. And suddenly, that's the thing about them you want to know, you see? And so you begin to find out that your teachers are often people who have been right around you. They're called upagurus as opposed to satguru. The satguru is somebody who beckons from beyond. He's somebody that's all finished. The upaguru is anybody or anything along the way which points the path that helps you along a little way. So that even your enemies often are your upagurus, because they wake you up to a place you're not, which helps you get free of that place, which helps you get on with it. So you learn to honor everybody you meet as your teacher when you see that there is nothing else you've got to do but be conscious for the good of yourself and all your fellow man, and to bring you closest to the place you're trying most to get to by all the other means you had thought you were working on. See? You work on your own consciousness, and the way to do that is to see the teaching that is in everything in the universe about where you're not or where you're asleep. So you begin to see that everything in your universe becomes your teacher, right? So your teacher is everywhere. Your guru is waiting for you to be ready for him. So that's the model you can work on. So you don't have to rush to India, because it's always right where you are. And there are beings that can get as high as any enlightened being ever got in sitting in the middle of Topeka, Kansas, or in the middle of New York, or in the middle of anywhere. Depends on your readiness, and that has to do with your karma, or your readiness to get on with it. Yes?
Why are you going back?
Why am I going back? It almost, at the level I function at, I'm almost going back because I'm going back. I wouldn't say I have any profound model of why I'm going back. I'm going back because my karmic attachments to that whole scene aren't done yet. I also see that my role, my thing in the water flowing downstream, dispassionate Taoist sense, is that I am a teacher. And I am a Western teacher. And that all of the experiences I had as a middle-class person and as a psychedelicist and a social scientist and a cellist and a pilot and all those things are all part of my preparation to be able to teach what I have to teach. and that part of my role is that of a Gnostic intermediary, that is, to bring metaphors from one system into another system. And that seems to be my thing. It's done without attachment, in that I'm doing it because I'm doing it because I'm doing it because I'm doing it, just like how I'm doing this one. Okay. And that is, I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and there are tapes being made, and those tapes are going to be listened to by thousands and thousands of people because they just pour around the country now. And everything I've had to say up until now as a teacher is said. I've done what I have to do. Now I'm free to go the next round inward. Now I can go into a cabin in New Hampshire or in a cabin in Topeka or just sit down and meditate and get on with it. But I also can go and pick up more metaphors as a teacher along the way, which is part of my teaching.
Then you're going to do more teaching.
Well, I don't have a model. All I can see is that I am a teacher, and as a teacher you collect more. See, the peculiar predicament I'm in is that I go back to the feet of this little old man in a blanket, and whatever, he's my guru, and whatever, I'm in the relation of a guru to chela. It's his trip, not mine anymore. I am in the role of service. I am now living out, and I now understand it in the most profound sense, what it means to say, not my, but thy will. See? So I'm just doing the trip, and I'm not writing the script at the moment. And when I get back, he may say, you finished your work and touch me and I turn into a butterfly. I don't know. Or I may go back and he kicks me and says, I don't know who you are. Go back to America. Or, I can't write the script. I don't know. And that is very difficult for our Western culture, where you usually have a model of what you're going to do then, and you're collecting this for that, and you're living in time. And I'm not living in time that way. Yes, sir.
These volumes of consciousness. That's about the fourth and fifth that I've been mentioning. Well defined, or there's so many that one blends the other. What is the ultimate? And please explain, as you see it, the highest level that you attain and what you can hope for above that.
As I said earlier, there are seven chakras or focal points, and the transition from the third to the fourth is the first one into the transcendent state. It's the first one into the state of compassion, that is, where one experiences the shifts over the figure ground relationship, so that one sees that you and I are human beings behind not only blue suitness or dark suitness and white shirtness, and behind personalities and ages and bodies, and there is a place where we are. There's an experience of, although we still see each other as separate, we are experiencing a feeling of a unitive nature with one another. That is another level of consciousness, where that unitive nature is real rather than intellectually known. It's a real plane. And that compassion is the compassion that what is happening to you is happening to me, because in that place you and I are a unitive being. We're just two different manifestations of that one consciousness. That's already fourth chakra. The fifth chakra is where you turn back inward, and rather than seeing the outward manifestations, you start to go deeper within, or deeper up as you might call it, and become preoccupied with higher planes of light or energy or form of it all, which are more and more subtle states of differences and similarities. It's as if we come into the place where we are energy, or where we are cellular formations. It's sort of different planes of perceptual organization of the universe, you could put it that way, as what these planes are about. The fifth chakra is very comparable to what's called the causal plane, which is it's a place where one has broken sufficient attachments to any one perspective place, so that you can stand back sufficiently far to gain what could be called cosmic perspective, to begin to see the most basic laws of the universe in operation everywhere in the universe. It's very much what the Egyptians were concerned with. It's what philosophy, it's what Plato's pure ideas are primarily about. That is sixth chakra. It's what we call wisdom. It's It's the wisdom of the ages of these laws, these very simple laws. It could also be called the Godhead in a religious formulation of the first thought forms, the thought out of which all the rest is manifestation. And at that place, you are in the realm of pure ideas. That is, if you are in the sixth chakra, you have, in a sense, left the gross body. You are no longer identified with this body, nor are you identified with your personality, even in that which is a more subtle plane. You're inside that one, and you are only identified with the ideas of which all of the rest of that is but manifestation, coming outward in planes of grossness. All right? Can you follow that formulation?